those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law.
Very true. Hi there. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. I hope your day is going well, regardless of when or where you may be listening. Thank you so much for listening. As I said, it's the... Why? Hey, make this sound right. My ears are not right, I guess. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. I just shot myself in the foot. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. Thanks for sharing the podcast with your friends. And thanks for surviving another Democrat debate. Will we talk about the Democrat debate today? As little as possible. That's all I can say. Because, quite honestly, if you watched it, it was like watching a class of preschoolers who have a substitute teacher. It just people talking out of order, screaming over each other. Complete pandemonium. It was pandelirium. It was just insane. And CBS wins the award for doing the worst job of moderating so far at a Democrat debate. It was terrible. It was just awful. People talking over each other, people shouting, people arguing with one another, and the best they could get out of the moderators was, please abide by the rules. Please. Thank you. Thank you very much. And yeah, you saw how much impact that made. It was a clown fest is what it was. It was the clowns in the clown car set loose on the stage. It was disgusting. It was a disgusting display is what it was last night. And in spite of everything, well, they jumped on Bernie Sanders for what he had to say about dictators and the like, and they should have, but at the same time, we have to remember that the vast majority of the people on that stage agree with Bernie. They just know better than to say so out loud in front of God and everybody. Those people, every last one of them, have the same kind of a worldview that Bernie does. They are just not stupid enough to say it out loud. So if you voted for any of the people that were on the stage last night, the vast majority of them are going to give you what Bernie wants to give you. Maybe not as intense or severe, but they still believe the same things. They still hate America. They don't believe this is the greatest country in the world. They don't believe in American exceptionalism. They don't believe in what has made this nation great. They blame this nation for the world's ills. They all believe that this nation was founded on racism. Why? Because
everything is racist.
As far as these people are concerned, everything is racist. It has to be because that's how they get the sympathy of the minorities, the minority vote. So basically you saw this bunch of nuts on stage last night acting out, and you probably didn't come away with much. It really was a sad state of affairs. Bernie Sanders is doubling down on his admiration for dictators. Joe Biden, he was fighting for it last night, and the people in the know are saying, yeah, he could still pull off South Carolina and win there, but that's because of the minority vote, and they link him to Barack Obama, which I think is really, really, really interesting, because if you'll recall, the Obama administration kept creepy Uncle Joe under wraps for almost the entire time. The administration, 8 years. You rarely saw Joe Biden out in public, and when you did, he said something embarrassing. So how can you link Joe Biden to Barack Obama in a positive way? The only way you can is if you weren't paying attention and you're just saying, oh yeah, he was Obama's vice president. I remember that much, so he's a good choice, right? He was Obama's man. That's the one we want. That's the only way that you can even possibly think about voting for Joe Biden. This guy who is a gaffe a day, a gaffe a minute. He's constantly forgetting where he is. He's forgetting what he's talking about. He's making mistakes. He's making claims which are completely and totally fraudulent. And fortunately, we now have a conservative press that's calling him to task on certain things. And the rest of them, wow. Bloomberg, he keeps throwing money. I keep seeing more Bloomberg ads. My mute button's getting a real workout. And, oh yeah, even on social media, on YouTube, I've griped about this before. On YouTube, many times when the ads pop up during a video or before a video that you want to watch, it says you can skip this ad in 5, 4, 3. It gives you a little countdown and you can skip the ads. Well, not so much with the Michael Bloomberg ads. You can't skip them. There's no skip option. You have to just grab the remote, mute the stupid thing, because everything he says in the ads, all of the claims, they're all lies. You don't have to, you can mute them, but you sure can't skip past them. So they've paid the extra premium to be unmutable on YouTube. And the ads are everywhere again. He's throwing more money at things. And you have to remember, he's not in the race to win it. He's actually publicly said so. Bloomberg has said he's not in it to win it. He's in it to take Trump out. So even if he is not in the race, he's going to be funding the effort to destroy Trump. That's why he's there. It is really a circus. It just really is. It's actually, I apologize to my circus friends, because I actually have circus friends. That was wrong. Because the circus has structure and it runs smoothly and it has purpose and it does something to delight the people. This is just, it's the inmates escaping from the asylum is what it is. If I may borrow Joe Biden's term, there was lots of malarkey on the stage last night. Lots. It's just sad. Well, as far as my world, things going on in my world, it was pretty much a nothing day yesterday. I got out for lunch. I had an errand to run. I did that. I came back. That was it. It was a studio day for me. I worked on audio edits and things like that for a couple of things and finalized a couple of audio projects and pretty much just took it easy yesterday, because I'm trying to get over whatever this is that's trying to knock me down. I'm not going to let it knock me down. Trust me, it's getting harder and harder. It's just like, I almost had no voice this morning, but I'm working on it. I'm hoping to stay ahead of it and knock it out. But today, I've got a Dawson Now session at 10:30 this morning. So if you're listening to this past that time, that means, wow, I get through. I have to edit. I have to do all of the things associated with posting this podcast and get it up online. And about the time I'm done with it, I've got to be in the car and on the road in order to get to the studio on the other side of town to do that podcast. And then we'll finish that up around lunchtime. And that's a good thing, because there's cool stuff to eat over on that side of town. Aha! So there is a ray of sunshine for today. Yay! You know, sometimes I like to run over to Just Facts Daily and see what they're up to. And yesterday afternoon, they had a question of the day that I thought was interesting. No doubt you have seen the lawyer ads on television for people who have used Roundup and have had some sort of cancer as well. They're tying using the weed killer Roundup to cancer. The active ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate. And if they're trying to tie that to cancer, and what you're seeing, these ads, they're all ads by law firms seeking people to join class action lawsuits against the makers of Roundup. That's what they're trying to do. And let me just, unless you're if you're totally unaware of how this class action lawsuit thing works, they get as many people as they can to join their class action lawsuit to give it some weight and endorsement. And they go to court and they get as much money as they can in a decision against a company. And then that is split between the lawyers, the law firm, and the people in the class action lawsuit. And I'm going to pull a number out of thin air here, but it's one that I've heard used several times. Let's say the legal team gets half of the award. Let's say it's $10 million. It's going to be a lot more than that. But if it's $10 million, that means, and I've heard $1 billion in association with Roundup. Let's say it's $1 billion. The legal team gets $500 million, and the other $500 million is divided amongst the hundreds of people, possibly thousands of people, who are part of the class action lawsuit, which means that they don't get a lot of money for their trouble for joining the class action lawsuit. They just don't get a lot of money at all. And then it's going to be taxed. And at that rate of taxation on that kind of money is in excess of 40%, I believe. So they're going to get just a little over half of that. So if you do a little bit of math, you realize that joining this particular class action lawsuit is not going to get you a lot of money. But it's going to make that law firm a lot, I mean a lot, of money. And every time I see one of those ads on TV, I shake my head. So, please, come on. Because I saw a study a couple of years ago. It's been more than a couple of years ago. But I saw a study about how much glyphosate you would have to ingest in order for it to affect you in a negative way. It was a lot. It was a lot of glyphosate. I mean, lots of it. And that brings us back around to Just Facts Daily's question of the day. The question is caffeine or glyphosate more toxic to mammals? Which is more toxic to mammals? Is it caffeine or glyphosate? The answer? It's caffeine. As detailed in an academic book published by the American Society for Microbiology, it takes more than 10 times the weight of glyphosate to kill rats than it does caffeine. You can kill rats with 1/10 of the amount of glyphosate. Think about that. Likewise, multiple studies have found that substances with low immediate toxic effects generally have low cancer-causing effects. Many people fail to understand that a fundamental principle of toxicology is that the dose makes the poison. And all substances can be toxic or benign depending on their doses. A 2019 survey published in the Journal of Nature Chemistry found that 76% of Europeans falsely believe that being exposed to a toxic synthetic chemical substance is always dangerous, no matter what the level of exposure is. So remember, the dose makes the poison. It's all about how much exposure you have. And how big is each exposure is. Now, if you drink as much coffee as I do, that makes you pause, because I drink a lot of coffee. I probably drink a pot a day myself, just myself. I have a much higher risk of being harmed in some way than someone who uses Roundup on the garden. And I think that's one of the things that the impressions that the lawsuit commercials are giving. That if you have used Roundup and then you came down with this particular form of cancer, you have a case. And it's not necessarily so. The two may be completely unrelated. It may just be a coincidence that you used Roundup in a cleanup process, or you use it every year to fight off something like, I don't know, like around our house, wisteria. And if you love wisteria, I'm really sorry, but it is nothing more than kudzu with pretty flowers. It is a fast-spreading invasive plant. But I think that's the impression they're giving, that if you used it, or if you got this this particular form of cancer, and you just happen to also use Roundup, they want to talk to you. But it doesn't really matter if that was the cause of your cancer. And that kind of sums up class action lawsuits in a nutshell. You're not going to make a lot of money if you join one anyway. But that's just something to know, to file away, that caffeine is 10 times more deadly than the glyphosate, which is found in Roundup. More after the break.
There is that fine line between genius and madness.
So true. So true. Hi there. Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of The Daily Perspective. It is the 26th day of February, 2020. We're halfway through the week. You stand up on your tiptoes, you can see the weekend from here. Careful, don't fall over. And I promise you, you're going to survive. Hey, you survived the debate last night. I know some of you. There was a debate? Yeah, there was a debate last night. There's so many of them. Which, in a way, I think is kind of beneficial because, you know, we get to see them on display for what they really are. And in a way, that is very helpful because they can't just hide behind the campaign stump speeches and such. We get to see them for who they really are, especially when they're dogpiling on one another like they did last night. But that's not what we're talking about right now. Yesterday, something else happened. The Democrats in the Senate did something reprehensible, just absolutely horrible. Democrats in the U.S. Senate yesterday blocked a bill that would have required clinics and hospitals to provide basic medical treatment to infants born alive after failed abortions. This is something that is not a daily occurrence. It's not a super common occurrence, but it does happen that an abortion is done late enough in the term of the pregnancy that the infant can survive outside the womb, and it does. And what's been happening is that those precious babies, those children, have been allowed to die on the table, to just die with no support. And legislation has been proposed, and it's been fought for to protect them. It's a human life. Democrats tried to position the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act as a radical assault on the bodily autonomy of women and an intrusion of the government into medical decisions. But it was nothing of the sort. You can read the text of the bill online. In fact, a link will be in today's show notes. I encourage you to go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and get the show notes and look for the link to this article. You'll find the link to the text right there in this article. It's coming from the Daily Wire. Despite the histrionics and claims from Democrats like Senator Gillibrand that the legislation would harm women, all the act would have done is prohibit abortionists from leaving infant children to die painful and unnecessary deaths after they've already been born. There is no clump of cells dodge available here. The humans in question are infant children, fully developed, living, breathing, and outside the womb. Democrats have now declared that even they should not have any legal protections. Even they can be discarded like trash. And that prompts the question, what's next? What's next for these people? After the child is born, you're home from the hospital, the bills kick in, everything is hard to pay for, and you realize having children is expensive. Are they going to say, we're defending taxpayers, Americans, and giving them the right to terminate infants? Considering what they've just done here, that's not outside the scope of possibility. As always, the pro-infanticide Democrats have the full support of the media. CNN, with no hint of irony, actually called babies born after abortions fetuses and distinguished them from newborn babies. Apparently, the way the baby exits the body determines whether it's a real human being or not. And if you believe that, you need to see about getting your meds checked. According to CNN, a newborn baby is a child that is born alive on purpose because his mother or her mother wants it. A child that is born alive accidentally because the mother doesn't want the child is still just a fetus. The humanity of a baby, even outside the womb, depends entirely on the mother's desires. Do you realize how insane this point of view actually is? Do you understand how mentally challenged you have to be in order to think that this is true? It will be argued that this bill was unnecessary because babies so rarely manage to survive abortions. Well, if that's true, why oppose the bill? And why claim that it is an attack on women's rights? But of course, that's not true. Hundreds of children have died after surviving abortion attempts. The current laws did not protect these victims. Abortionists may not be able to legally execute infants born alive, although Kermit Gosnell did exactly that for decades before they caught him. But they can refuse to provide basic medical treatment to save the child's life. And that's exactly what has happened hundreds of times and will now continue to happen, thanks to Senate Democrats. It should be noted that Democrats also today or yesterday blocked a bill that would have banned abortions after 20 weeks gestation. Babies at that stage can feel pain. At 22 weeks, just two weeks after that, they can survive outside the womb. Nobody is surprised by this move, but it again underscores the point that the Democrat Party is, at this point, nothing more than a whore of the abortion industry. It is morally corrupted and evil to its core. It is an enemy of life and dignity. The Democrats may hide behind their claim that they are protecting the choice of the woman. But the truth is, they are owned by the abortion industry. They grant the abortion industry tax breaks, and the abortion industry spends money, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, every campaign cycle, campaigning for Democrats, aiding Democrats in re-election so that they can continue to get tax breaks and grants from the government. So the Democrats are in bed with the abortion industry because it's financially profitable for them to do so. It keeps them in power. And that really is the bottom line. You can have a lot of different arguments about abortion itself. You can pick your position and stand on it if you want to. But when a child is born alive and can survive as long as someone cares for it, and politicians decide that that child is not a child, then that is insanity. And it is evil. Their motivation is money and power. And that's another facet that makes it even more evil.
we as a people have to realize that abortion is the next great evil we have to abolish. But what about these poor people? I'm sorry. The arguments about rape and incest don't hold water, because the percentage of pregnancies which are a result of rape and incest are microscopic. It's just microscopic. But what about those people? There are people who will care for the children. If the mother can't cope with the results, there are people literally lined up waiting for newborns. That argument also doesn't hold water. But you conservatives, you won't adopt the children. Oh, really? We're lining up to adopt the children. There are couples who have been in line for a long time waiting for newborns. So that argument is a lie. Abortion is the next great evil we must destroy. The same way we destroyed slavery in the United States of America, we should focus on destroying abortion. Because it is, if not more evil, it is equally evil. And it should be abolished. And my hope is that history will look back on these times and point to these times and say, this is when the Holocaust of abortion ended.
What a maroon! What an ignoramus!
What did I say? Come on! Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast, the Wednesday edition, February 26, 2020. Thank you so much for being there. I appreciate you listening, being part of the group. In that last segment talking about abortion, one of the arguments is that a woman's right to choose should be protected. But there's an interesting side to that whole argument, and that is that never, ever, ever has the right to choose not to have an abortion been praised. Never. It's always about choosing. The freedom to choose to kill your offspring. Always. And that's the sad part. There is a choice, and there is a time to choose. And that time to choose is before anything happens that causes pregnancy. That's the time to choose. And sadly, we live in a time, in a society, that is becoming a bunch of children. I've talked about this before. We hold on to our video games. We hold on to our toys from childhood. Well, there are people who are in their 30s living in their parents' homes who watch animated TV series religiously. We're becoming a society of children. Government helps that by wanting to mandate that children be kept on their parents' health insurance until they're in their mid-20s. And other things like that. But we've become a society of adult children who can't assume responsibility for their actions and want to blame everyone else. It's his fault. And that's the sad thing. It's always somebody else's fault. You won't assume responsibility for your own actions. Well, it's been a well-known fact that a certain type of activity produces children. It doesn't matter how much birth control you apply, there's always the chance. And adults
responsible people assume responsibility for what happens as a result. And they change their lives to invest in the life of another. But overgrown children? Nah, they won't do it. Moving along, yesterday I talked about the death of DHS whistleblower Philip Haney. You may have seen the news reports. It hasn't been one of those things you'll see in the mainstream press, mainly because they don't want to touch this story. But his death was reported to be a suicide, found in a rural area on the side of the road in his car, dead from a gunshot wound. Yesterday, I said he blew his brains out. And as I said it, I thought, wait a minute, I haven't seen anything that says he blew his brains out. I made an assumption. Because generally speaking, if you're going to use a gun, if it's a gunshot wound, the vast majority of the time, you hold the barrel of the gun to your temple or stick it in your mouth and pull the trigger. That's generally how people do it. Philip Haney was found with a gunshot wound to the chest. The chest. Think about how awkward it is, how difficult it is to hold a firearm to your chest and shoot yourself. It's doable, but it's not as easy. And also the firearm is in your line of sight. Something doesn't happen if you take another route, which makes it even mentally more difficult. Well, the sheriff's office in rural Amador County, California, which originally labeled the death by a single gunshot of DHS Obama-era whistleblower Philip Haney last week as self-inflicted, has now backed away from that assertion. A follow-up press release from the office of the sheriff, coroner, on Monday had this to say. On February 22nd, the Amador County Sheriff's Office released initial details regarding Philip Haney being found deceased in our jurisdiction. Unfortunately, there was misinformation being immediately put out that we have determined Mr. Haney's death to be a suicide. This is not the case. We are currently in the beginning phase of our investigation, and any final determination as to the cause and manner of Mr. Haney's death would be extremely premature and inappropriate. No determination will be made until all evidence is examined and analyzed. So the Amador County Sheriff's Office is clamping down on this. They're saying, no, we never said it was a suicide. Okay. But people are going to be wondering, okay, if it wasn't a suicide, what happened then? This latest official statement, on top of an avalanche of comments by his friends and colleagues on social media, further opens the door to the widespread suspicion that Haney was the victim of politically motivated foul play. Typical of the skeptics is Teresa Monroe Hamilton, who wrote an article on Sunday. The article was titled, Philip Haney's Death, More Questions Than Answers. On Saturday, Jan Markell, the founder of Olive Tree Ministries, author, host of a popular Christian radio show in the U.S. called Understanding the Times, posted a tweet, which he later deleted. His tweet said this, My friend, Phil Haney, was found shot yesterday in California. I had lunch with him a month ago. He warned something could happen to him. He was to get married in a month. It will be falsely called a suicide. Haney was a guest on Markell's program on several occasions, including in 2018, with former Representative Michelle Bachmann. Emails to the author of this particular story were sent. Emails were sent to them. Here's one of them. Peter, I received personal emails from Phil Haney. I believe he was murdered. It was not suicide. He had a book coming out in March. He's been part of seminar Enemies Within that I've been a part of. The article goes on. It's in American Thinker.
I won't go any further into the article. Get the show notes. Read the rest of it for yourself, because it goes into some pretty deep conspiracy theory stuff. Enough for me is the fact that the Amador County, California Sheriff's Office has said, no, we never said it was a suicide. Well, where did the suicide idea come from? And I read or heard that he died from a gunshot wound to the chest. That is atypical. It is not common. It happens, but it's not common in suicide by gun. It's a strange situation, a strange story. This guy was a whistleblower who could reveal dirt about the Obama administration. All I'm saying is it's one of those things that makes you go, That's really all you can say at this point. Will we get to the bottom of this story? I don't think so. The only place you're going to find anything written about it is going to be on the edges of conservative media. We'll see. Back to the debate. Who could have imagined that the debate in Charleston last night would be worse than the previous one? The one during which Elizabeth Warren went after Bloomberg with a scythe. Bernie did his wild-eyed, crazed thing, and Biden fell flat. Well, this time Bloomberg was better. Warren's still a shrew. Steyer? Why is he even there? He really has nothing to say. Joe Biden's lost a bit more of his disappearing gray matter, and he consistently mispronounces words, loses his train of thought, claims credit for things he didn't do, and generally embarrasses himself. He thinks he is Zelig. Do you remember the movie Zelig? I encourage you to look it up. It's a Woody Allen film. I don't care what you think of Woody Allen. The movie Zelig is funny. It's so funny. He thinks he is Zelig, that he was arrested in South Africa, that he negotiated the Paris Climate Accord with Deng Xiaoping, who died in 1997. Why on earth has his wife not put an end to this nightmare? No matter who has urged Biden to run, his wife should have known he was not up to the challenge. She must want this more than he does, which is contemptible. She's allowing him to make a sad fool of himself over and over again. No need to repeat the long list of his many gaffes. Zelig, by the way, is about a man who literally was everywhere. And it's comprised mainly of a narrator and a lot of historical footage. Old black and white, jittery, gray, black and white, old, scratchy movie footage in which Woody Allen playing the part of Zelig has been inserted. And he's been at the center of practically every monumental thing in history. It's really funny. It's one of those, did you notice this? Things. Funny movie. Klobuchar, Buttigieg, and Bloomberg all seemed relatively rational compared to Sanders, Warren, Biden, and Steyer, but they all essentially support Sanders' policies. They're just less honest about their socialism. They all know that not one of them can beat Trump. They all know that the policies they're promoting will undo the thriving Trump economy, and they don't care. They're all leftists, and leftists are all about imposing their stringent authoritarian commands upon us all. Not one of them ever mentions the words freedom or liberty. These basic rights guaranteed to us all by our Constitution are not remotely on their radar. That's why none of them can win. They all eschew the American Constitution but claim their allegiance to it for political purposes only. But all eyes were on Sanders and Bloomberg, the communist and the billionaire. Sanders can't help but express his admiration for Fidel Castro, the Soviet Union, and the communist dictators of Venezuela and Nicaragua. But he can't bring himself to say anything positive about America. Sanders is a totalitarian communist at heart. And that's something we should all remember. Bernie Sanders is a communist, regardless of how he labels himself. Sanders is a communist.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by Whatever We Have in Stock Are Us, your one-stop place to shop for whatever we happen to have lying around at the time.
Ooh, I love that place. Hi there, welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Heading into the final segment for this midweek edition on Wednesday, the 26th day of February. Back to the politics at hand. There's a poll that's circulating in D.C., making the rounds on Capitol Hill. It's a poll paid for by Michael Bloomberg. And the Republicans are very happy about it. The Democrats, not so much. Politico is reporting that the poll found Sanders running about even with Trump in 40 contested districts with a Democrat incumbent. But when people find out about some of Sanders' socialist plans, well, it's a different story. The poll of voters in more than 40 battleground House districts currently held by Democrats, conducted by Global Strategy Group for the Bloomberg campaign and obtained by Politico from two sources, found that Sanders is less popular than Trump and loses significant support when hit for holding socialist positions. Sanders is a self-described democratic socialist, a distinction that his opponents are starting to draw more frequently in the days following the Vermont senator's dominance in Nevada. His agenda of Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and guaranteed tuition and debt-free public colleges has rankled more establishment members of the party. The poll found Sanders essentially running even with Trump in a head-to-head matchup across the districts, trailing the incumbent by just 1 point. But Trump opens up a 6-point advantage after a list of negative messages about Sanders' ideology and alleged ineffectiveness in the Senate is presented to poll respondents. That does not bode well for Bernie in many of the battleground states, like Wisconsin and Ohio. But for Democrats, the news is even worse. Sanders' potential impact extends beyond the presidential race. A plurality of voters, 39%, say they will be less likely to vote for a Democrat for Congress if Sanders is the Democratic nominee and his ideas are folded into the party platform. That's nearly double the 21% who say they would be more likely to vote for a Democrat for Congress, while 34% say it wouldn't impact their vote. The poll also found that 47% of voters in competitive Democratic-held districts felt that the increased role of socialist ideas in the Democratic Party was a bad thing, and 19% believe it's a good thing. 24% said it makes no difference to them. Even though the poll was paid for by Bloomberg, Global Strategy Group is not known for its push polling and is in fact a left-leaning polling outfit. There's no reason to doubt the negative impact a Sanders nomination would have up and down the Democratic ballot. Trump and the Republicans can tie the Sanders millstone around the neck of every Democrat running. Trump and the GOP will certainly have the money to do that. People must be forced to look up from their phones and pay attention to just who Bernie Sanders is and what he wants. He's gotten this far because most voters have been ignorant of the fact that his Medicare for All plan would cost $38 trillion over 10 years, or his free college tuition plan would cost another $3 trillion, and his recently announced universal child care initiative, another $1.5 trillion. And that's not even including the Green New Deal Sanders and other climate warriors want to foist on the American people. Do people want a single-payer health insurance system? Do they want the government to care for their children? Do they want Sanders and the Democrats to spend us into catastrophe? The answer is going to be no. As long as Republicans can rip off Sanders' mask and expose him for the radical revolutionary he is. Yet another reason for us to hope that Sanders succeeds. The Democrat Party is savvy enough to know that Sanders is the kiss of death for them. The DNC, they're aware, which is one reason they changed the rules and let Michael Bloomberg in.
They were hoping somebody who appeared to be more rational and sane would have an appeal that could bump Bernie. That's why they're still holding out hope for Joe Biden. They're hoping that somebody can bump Bernie Sanders out of the lead. And if they can't, I think we can look for a brokered convention. I don't think the DNC is going to let Sanders be their candidate, if at all possible. Because they know if he's the candidate, that the people that they're counting on voting for them in the races below below Sanders on the ticket, the people they're counting on voting for those people to keep them in power in the House and the Senate, they'll look at Sanders and they'll think, wow, if that's what this party believes, I don't want to vote for these people. And as I said, that's one reason to root for Sanders. There's actually a campaign, chaos campaign, going on right now that is moving people. Conservatives, Republicans, are actually switching and voting for Sanders in the primaries because they know that Sanders is the answer for the Republicans. Because Sanders has proven he's nuts. He keeps doubling down on what he's said about dictators and, well, it wasn't all bad. No, it wasn't all bad, Bernie. They murdered millions of people. They've murdered so many people. Even in Cuba, they murdered so many people. And by the way, it wasn't a literacy program. It was an indoctrination program. It wasn't literacy. Because, well, we went over that yesterday. Just get yesterday's podcast if you didn't hear why. We're too smart to accept something like Bernie Sanders. But we can at least hope the Democrats aren't that smart and that enough of them are out there fighting for him that when it comes down to the one-on-one, we're faced off with Sanders. That would be fantastic. But then the Democrats are about protecting themselves. For example, they may be trying to do away with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's seat in Congress. The New York Post is reporting in an editorial posted over the weekend, they noted her political action committee, Courage to Change, is supporting a slate of 7 House candidates. Ocasio-Cortez, a New York Democrat, noted in a tweet on Friday, "It's time to elect a progressive majority in Congress, accountable to strong grassroots movements that push support for issues like Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, racial justice, and more." Bless their hearts. It is true, you know.
Everything is racist!
Yeah. Mm. "It's time to elect public servants with the courage to change," she says. And she was recently quoted in the New York Times as saying, "I think my ambition right now is to be a little less lonely in Congress." You see, she's trying to get more radical leftists, progressives, communists elected to the House and to the Senate to overpower our Constitution and completely ignore it and do whatever they want to do with the United States of America. Because, as I've said before, and I'll say again, as far as they're concerned, this is all about fundamentally transforming the United States of America. That's what Obama said. He said it out loud in front of God and everybody. And that's exactly what they're up to. The Post says, "She may not last in Congress, though. Already in hot water for refusing to pay dues to her caucus's fundraising arm, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, she's now devoting her resources instead to defeating Democrats. Don't be surprised when the established Democrats who will control redistricting after the 2020 census do their best to eliminate her seat." Meanwhile, 13 candidates have registered to take her on in November. 8 Republicans and 5 Democrats. 13 candidates are going up against her this year. We can hope that hopefully a conservative, a Republican, will be elected and sanity will be restored. We can hope. I don't know that it's going to happen, but we can hope. And speaking of restoring sanity, Ted Cruz stepped up yesterday, tore into Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor for a widely noticed dissent in which she blasted her colleagues for lifting injunctions on controversial Trump administration policies. I don't know about you, but when I saw what she had said and what she had done, my first thought was, wow, that's highly unprofessional and just very wrong for a Supreme Court justice to do what she did. During a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the use of nationwide injunctions which stop policies from taking effect, Cruz cast the blame on liberal jurists for what he described as an abnormal number of these measures against the Trump administration in the first place. He accused judges of acting as partisan political activists. This, he argued, has reasonably resulted in the government fighting back. He says, I read it a little like an arsonist complaining about the noise from fire trucks, Cruz said of Sotomayor's dissenting opinion in Wolf versus Cook County, which dealt with the regulations placing restrictions on non-citizens applying for visas to enter the U.S. A lower court had issued a nationwide injunction against the administration blocking the regulations, although the Cook County case only dealt with an Illinois injunction. Sotomayor used her dissent to rail against the administration for its repeated tactic of applying for emergency stays so injunctions could be put on hold. Cruz turned the issue around, stating the Trump administration would not have to take such measures if judges weren't granting an unusual number of nationwide injunctions. He's right. Activist judges seeking to overturn the work of the Trump administration. And that's the issue. Activist judges with whom Sotomayor agrees. And that's her problem. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good Wednesday. Let's get back together tomorrow morning for the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective. I'll see you then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.